on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? It's been a week. I know you missed us. It's YoteCast. We're back with another episode, and we've got a good one for you today. A really, really good conversation coming up in the show today with Charlie Babcock, who is a cross-country and track runner from Minnesota. So really had a good conversation with Charlie. It's interesting. Everybody finds their interest in the world, you know, whatever you're doing, whether it's your job, a hobby, whatever, everybody finds that in a different way. And Charlie has his unique experience on the way that he got into running and it became a passion for him, and also why he's chasing medical school. Very unique deal there. So invite you to listen to our conversation with Charlie. Hey, if you haven't been keeping up, the South Dakota men's basketball game that was rescheduled against North Dakota State, it was originally rescheduled for January 31st. That has now been pushed back a week to February 7th, when South Dakota will play at North Dakota State in Fargo. So that is February 7th. And I think I've said this before, but I would encourage you to constantly check schedules, because things are changing so much with some of these games, and some of it has to do with other games, other reschedules, things of that nature. So just keep an eye on the schedules, because this stuff can change, you know, in the blink of an eye, it feels like. So keep an eye on schedules as they continue to change. But the men's basketball game at North Dakota State is now February 7th. February 7th at 7 o'clock. That is on a Monday. That'll be a big week for the Coyote men. Like a busy week is what I mean. The Coyotes will host South Dakota State on February 5th. They'll travel to Fargo February 7th. They'll travel to Omaha on February 10th, and then be at Denver on February 12th. So that's going to be a very, very busy week for the South Dakota men's basketball team, but sometimes that is just the way that it goes. All right, coming up in the show today, I mentioned Charlie Babcock. We'll talk to him coming up in just a little bit. We'll get the show started with David Herbster, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota.
David, we continue through the basketball seasons, and right now both basketball teams are playing extremely well. The men, I know they had a tough week with a lot of games jammed into it, but they won 3 out of 4 this past week, and good to see them kind of finding their stride a little bit with 3 straight wins.
No, it is. You know, as you and I talked about this, I mean, the first, you know, right after Christmas has been a little bit of a struggle for this group as far as getting enough players healthy to have a practice, and then certainly having some games canceled. Then you right away, you turn around and go on the road to in a tough environment and play at South Dakota State. Good fight, but not enough. But then right away, you travel up to Grand Forks to play a rescheduled game, mm-hmm. and then in short order got to come back that next day and get prepared for 2 more games. And so, you know, I think, like you and I talked, this weekend you kind of saw them hit a little bit of a rhythm, I think, especially from a lineup perspective. Now, remember, we're playing without Xavier Fuller, so you adjust your lineup a little bit, and I think some players are getting comfortable in their roles, getting comfortable with the minutes, and frankly playing with each other. And we certainly, you know, that culminated last week. I mean, again, you know, Omaha was on a long road trip playing without a couple of players. We were back healthy, just jumped on them, and you beat them by 35 points. And I don't know if we had 5 or 6 players in double figures. It was quite a bit. So that was – it's good to see their stride, playing really hard and aggressive on both ends of the court and just seeing a lot of contributions from different players.
Yeah, a lot of excitement right now around them, and they'll hit the road this week. Women's basketball gets to come home. Talk about a team that's in stride right now. 12 consecutive wins. They're 7-0 in the Summit League entering the week. And, boy, that last week, they were up 30-3 at the end of the first quarter at Denver. That's pretty impressive. This team's clicking right now.
Yeah, if you just think about that, in 8 minutes of play, 10 minutes of play, 30-3, and that's, I said 8 minutes, I got high school and college on the brain right now as far as quarters and what are we, a quarter, are we half? What the heck are we playing? That's always been one of those that still I just shake my head at, how you can have two sports playing the same game but using a different timing structure.
We need to get men's basketball to quarters.
Right?
Right?
Right? Because then maybe some of these guys, we can get them, you know, we can get out of the bonus halfway through, and we get to, we get a do-over the second 10 minutes right now. You know, that Omaha game, was it the first half? I think it was the second half. It might have been 12 minutes left in the game, and we were in the bonus.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, you know, at that point, the second half's going to take a long time. But anyway, back to women's basketball. You know, they fit their stride defensively. Again, they're just playing really, really well together. Have been fortunate not only being able to stay healthy, but have a consistent lineup. And really, in some of these games, being able to bring some players off the bench, again, like the men's team, but get contributions from a lot of players. And you can do that when you can stretch your lead to, you know, 20-plus points. And then you can start to give some players rest during the game. So instead of playing 38, 39 minutes, maybe you're only playing 28 minutes. And that, believe it or not, 10 minutes makes a huge difference from a recovery standpoint, not only from, especially on those short turnarounds from Thursdays to Saturdays, but it definitely helps you from, you know, leading into getting a little bit of rest that week going into the next week's game. But hitting their stride, and at this point, we're not quite at the half-point season. After the games this weekend, we'll kind of be at the half-point season yet. I say that, and we haven't even played North Dakota State yet on the men's side. So we'll be kind of at the halfway point.
Yeah, it's hard to – everybody's going to have a different halfway point this year than normal, no doubt. You know, last week, obviously, there was an announcement of a contract extension for Leanne Williamson. She's done a tremendous job with the volleyball program. Obviously, they've had a great deal of success with the appearances in NCAA tournaments and even the run in the secondary tournament here a few years ago, mm-hmm. which filled the stands at home and was fun. They continue to schedule well, and she's just built a tremendous program, but really good to see her get that contract extension.
It was, you know, and just in working with her on it, it's, in totality, you look at the program itself, both from the success at the Summit League level, the success making, you know, winning regular season tournaments, being able to host a tournament, going into the NCAA tournament. There had been such a consistent level of success each year, and she was getting to that point in her contract, was, you know, getting past the halfway point in her contract, that we really wanted to have those conversations and just renew that and kind of reassure not only the program but recruits, the current team, and everybody that Leanne was going to be our coach for the foreseeable future.
When you look at contract extensions, you know, we've only been at this for a few years with the multi-year contract extensions. It's still fairly new. But how much has that helped in your position with the idea of keeping coaches here or even recruiting and things like that to be able to add these multi-year contracts?
It's it's a fair question, right? And until we had jumped into this with multi-year contracts, and Coach Nielsen was our first multi-year contract, we didn't have a problem keeping coaches because the only option was a single-year contract. So regardless of what it maybe had meant to them or had, you know, however they felt about it, at the time in some of the coaches that we had to recruit, I think, you know, Craig Smith came in here under a one-year contract and so did Amy Williams. I certainly think it helped getting the types of coaches like a Dawn or a Bob Nielsen or a Todd Lee when you had the ability to have a multi-year contract, because what coaches want is security. Mm-hmm. And I know that there is what I hear a lot, not just from our coaches, but from others, is that it's the recruits always ask about it. Well, and they do, and they would want to know, how long are you going to be here, coach? Well, take a look at the record, and you have an idea how long they're going to be there, because, you know, if I'm bringing someone in, you know, if I'm recruiting someone as a player, and I've got a track record of nothing but success, even on a one-year contract, I'm not, as a player, I mean, I wouldn't be particularly worried about it. And if my daughter's going to go there, she wouldn't be particularly worried about it. But if there's any type of, you know, ups and downs, then you're like, okay, well, am I going to go there? Are they committed to you, right? And so, you know, I think that is a big factor. I think it's one that the current team and the current staff, because it's not only recruits you kind of think about. You look at an entire staff, you know, they think about that as well. Do I need to start looking? Is this a for sure thing? You know, so there's a lot of things that you think about. But, you know, why do that with Leanne? Well, at this point, why not? I mean, she's proven it to herself. And you look at trying to ensure that you can – you commit them to maintaining that same type of success. So not only, you certainly would look at wins and losses as a big one, not only conference finish, but conference championships, NCAA participation, and a history and a consecutive history of those types of, you know, occurrences happening. And then you also look at, you know, the other elements. Let's take a look at the academic success of the student athletes. Look at the overall social well-being and welfare of the athletes. And, you know, what kind of culture persists there? Are these the type of, is this the type of team that's in or out of trouble? I mean, because all of that kind of goes in together to saying, okay, we've got the foundation, let's move forward. And in some cases, it's when do you move forward? I don't want a coach to go into the last year of a contract not knowing, because if you're going into the last year of the contract and we haven't had any conversations, it could be a new four-year contract, it could be just a one-year extension, or is it a brand new contract? But if you get to that point, you're in the last year of the contract, you really want to be in lockstep of where you're at and where the, in what direction the program's going.
So you're saying really the evaluation goes in, really obviously the entire contract, but you really want to start thinking about that extension with a year remaining on the contract, just so everybody's not in limbo, because I think the athletics department wants its protection or security, if you will, as well with these coaches.
Well, exactly. There's no shortage of, you know, when you have really, really successful coaches, you would like to keep them here. Hopefully you would think that a contract is going to do that. But we know in a lot of these contracts, if somebody comes calling, they also have the ability, especially if they're an FBS or let's say a Power 5 level, any type of buyout in a contract doesn't really mean much to them if they're based on, especially based on what they're going to be paying their coach. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd be paying them. So is that a deterrent? No, I guess you look more for the overall commitment and really how are they here? I think, and sometimes you can look at, you know, Power 5 school's talking to me, I think I need to go there, and or another school, and you really want to have that conversation. I think our coaches are very well grounded, and they kind of see this. A, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. Are you going to have the type of support there that you get here? What is it that you're looking for, not only personally, but professionally, and then socially, and from a team and a culture standpoint, department-wide, campus-wide, what is it that you're looking for? And I think in many cases, you can go to some other schools and realize, even that are a much higher level than us, and realize, yeah, it's not so much, it's not as great there as it is here. But at the same time, you know, we've had coaches leave us. I mean, Craig Smith went to Utah State, now he's at Utah, and Amy Williams went to Nebraska. So there's certainly some draws that'll pull coaches away.
With the contracts, and we always talk about extensions because it's extending their stay at USD, but Can you extend, if there's 2 years left on a contract, can you add a five-year extension to make that a seven-year deal, or is 5 years kind of the maximum contract that you can have?
5 years would be the maximum contract that you have. So let's say you have 2 years remaining on your contract. You can do one of two things. You can just do a three-year extension, or you just redo the contract and just do a five-year contract at that point. But 5 years is the limit.
Yeah,
well, and you know, at our level, it should be the limit.
Sure.
I mean, because we don't have, you know, if you know, you look at some of the coaches, especially this year in football, some of the coaches that were let go. In some cases, people are starting to let their football coaches go, and I'm talking at the FBS level, halfway through the season, early in the season, or with two games left in the season. But you've got those buyouts, those departments understand that they're, whatever the remaining term on that contract, that they're, and whatever the buyout format of that contract is, you owe that coach and or that coaching staff, depending on how that works.
Sure.
So yeah, it's lots of moving parts.
There's a lot that goes into it each and every time there's a contract involved. All right, let's talk scheduling, because that's one of our that's our Ask the AD question this week. Obviously, conference scheduling, a lot of people don't like the setup right now with the mirror scheduling. So the question is, will mirror scheduling be in the rearview mirror in next basketball season?
I don't know. I guess long story short, it depends. I think made the commitment this year to do the mirror scheduling, and we haven't made any decisions, and frankly haven't even had any conversations about what next year's schedule is going to look like. And it might be a little bit more challenging to think about that cleanly with COVID, with some of the cancellations and some of the games moving around. And you know, you thought you'd have some consistency on games on Thursdays and Saturdays, but now with some of this rescheduling, you're having games on Mondays and Tuesdays, which takes us all the way back to square one.
Sure.
It really does. So, you know, when we did this format, I go back this far, John, I'm not sure, maybe 2015 or so, we had entertained and started, and we went down this format. And I think we made it 2 years under this format, and then we kind of blew it up. But again, this type of scheduling works when you have an even number of teams. And so if you have nine teams, it's definitely not as clean to have a mirror schedule. Yeah. So the challenge is, though, I mean, on the upside, you know, your games are always on Thursdays and Saturdays. So you have some consistency, because what we heard again from fans and certainly our coaches and everybody else, well, we had games on Tuesdays. We had games on Wednesdays. We had games on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, heck, maybe even Sundays. So they were all over the board. So, you know, you had that inconsistency. And the challenges now are, especially when games are on the same day. If they're on Thursdays, they're probably both at 7 o'clock, or they're, depending on the time zone, 7 and 8 o'clock, or 6 and 7 o'clock, whatever it is. So you get, you know, the games on the same day. Your facilities never get a weekend off. You potentially facility conflicts where you're going to have to certainly block them off more, because you know you're always going to have games on Thursdays and Saturdays. It does split your fan base. It splits your media coverage. It splits your media broadcasters, for the most part, and I know what ours looks like. I don't know if we even have games on Saturday that are both going to go off at the very same time. You know, I know certainly what we've tried to do is avoid any of that on Saturdays, where we can have them at, you know, that's why you see a 1 o'clock, a 4 o'clock, or a 1 o'clock and a 6 o'clock, so we don't run into each other. But it is. Fans are like, okay, which game do I watch? Mm-hmm. I want to go to this one, and. But I want to see this one when they're on the road, and you can't do both. Or if you do both, you're sitting in the arena watching a live game, trying to stream one on your phone, which can be a challenge too.
Yeah, no doubt. How many different formats get discussed in these conversations? I know some leagues do like men on Thursday, Saturday, women on Friday, Sunday. Some people want double headers, but the women don't always want to be the 5 o'clock game because people have to work and they're late getting there. There's a lot of challenges with this. How many different formats, or is it always a constant discussion on trying to figure out how to alleviate the most problems?
Oh, I think we've kind of reviewed all the different formats that you probably could, and realize that we're also in a situation where we're not a charter league. We're not taking charter flights to these games. I mean, you're on a bus or you're on a commercial flight, so the time to get to get on the road. Let's say to get to a midweek game. Let's say it's a Wednesday game on the road. And we got to go to Denver. Well, if we're doing that on the road, then we're flying out on Tuesday, playing Wednesday, probably flying back on Thursday, or depending on when your next game is, do you fly to your next destination? So it's a lot more missed class time that way. You know, there's a whole host of things that you can do, but it does come down to, I look at it as what's in the best interest of the student athletes and the recovery of the student athletes, but also look at this. You know, basketball is our premier sport. Right. I mean, for the Summit League's perspective, sure. Right? So you really got to look at it. How do we put that? What does the format look like for us to highlight basketball at the highest level and provide kind of focused attention on each and every game? Because right now, each and every game is you're getting washed out a little bit because they're all getting played on Thursdays and Saturdays. And so, from a fan attendance standpoint and a marketing standpoint, I mean, that does pose some challenges. So I think what we need to figure out is what makes the best sense for us to maximize the exposure for the basketball program in our areas and then in our respective regions. Because all of this and all of this interest, and that's not only the interest of fans going to the home games, fans traveling to the away games, but funnel that all into the Summit League tournament, you've really got to, you know, kind of chart that path to create this environment where you can maximize the exposure and the interest as you get to the Summit League tournament. And guess what? Along the way, you would hope that us as individual schools might benefit that from higher attendance and our ability to kind of reach out. Because there's no doubt you can get some fan fatigue. It's every Thursday, Saturday. And depending on what state you're in, you also have different makeups of, you know, when you compete against high school basketball and things like that. So I know I said long story short, and I did. And that by your first question, I said I don't know. I would imagine right now, I'd say this is the way it's going to be next year until we have another conversation. But there are alternatives that we could probably look at sooner than later.
Yeah, always a lot of things to discuss and continue to evaluate throughout these processes. David, thanks so much for the time. Greatly appreciated as always.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you, man.
He's David Herbster, the athletics director at the University of South Dakota. Good stuff from David Herbster, no doubt. Always willing to chat with us. Again, if you have a question for Ask the AD, invite you to email that to yotecast@usd.edu. You can send me a message directly on social media, respond to the social media posts put out by USD, however you want to do it. But those are ways to get your questions in to David Herbster. Always willing to talk to us about different things, so send them in. It helps us with topics for conversation as well. Well, I mentioned Charlie Babcock. He is a runner from the state of Minnesota. He's been at USD, a young man who found himself in a spot where he was trying to find something to be successful at, and he was terrible at, he was small for football, he was terrible at running, but running became his passion. He's grown in it, and he shares that story here in our conversation. Charlie Babcock.
Charlie, coming off of a victory over the weekend, the unseeded 3K, how did it feel to just get back into competition?
Getting back into competition, it was nice. So we had a time trial about 10 days before, and I was probably more nervous for the time trial than I was the actual race, because it's, you know, when you take like a few months off and all that, you just are like, what am I capable of? And I was, so we did a 3K. I knew what I was capable of at that point, and I my PR was a 8:44 before this in the 3K time trial. I ran a 8:51, so I was thinking, you know, I can, you know, go a little bit faster. And then, as you mentioned, I was in the unseated 3K, which irritated me a lot, because I was looking at the times. There's a lot of freshmen from other schools that put in times that were not so accurate, and I knew I deserved to be in the fast heat, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to go in this unseeded race, and I'm going to show them. I said that, and I actually surprised myself. I had an 8-second PR, so then from 10 days, I went from an 8:51 to a 8:36. Yeah, and I mean, I wasn't leading the race until the last 600 meters, but when I did take the lead, I took it pretty handily, and I took fifth overall in the meet, which is pretty good considering I wasn't even put in the fast race. So
obviously you had a lot of motivation. How do you bottle that motivation up going forward and get that mindset? Maybe other people don't think you belong, and you got to prove them otherwise.
Yeah, well, especially at that meet, I had that. As my coach Fitz, he said I had a chip on my shoulder, which I think was accurate, and I kind of feel that way because I have yet to ever score a point at one of our conference meets, although I've had performances that were right there, but then at the end didn't quite fall into place, and you know, there's all these factors, and I just know like that this season I've been putting in the work, and I'm really just, it's sometimes it's a little bit of anger, you know, when you find out you're not in the fast seat, but then sometimes it's just also the combination of just truly loving running, and you're just like, I just want to get as fast as I can be, and I'll do that at pretty much any cost, and that's kind of how I'm going forward from here.
What have the last couple of years been like for you, obviously, with the pandemic and just the way it's affected college athletics?
Yeah, actually, if anything, the pandemic has, like, helped me in a sense of I came in as a freshman, wasn't as fast as everyone else, and when the pandemic hit, it really showed who likes running, who doesn't. And for me, when everything went on lockdown, I just went, I have a lot of time to run now, like spend time outside and all that, you know, and that's when I actually really started bumping up my miles then. And when everyone kind of came back, you know, there's some people that weren't really working out because they're like, oh, I'll be fine. Who knows when we're racing next? And I was like, I don't care when I'm racing next. I'm just going to keep on getting faster. And so I went from, you know, being like one of our last people on our conference team to becoming like second, or I mean, I guess on the returning time trial, that summer time trial I actually won it. But, you know, we have other fast people on the team that quickly caught up to me after. Sure. But that's actually how I became one of the top cross-country runners on our team, was over that break. And, yeah, I think it just kind of gave me time to set my priorities straight and realize, like, I'm actually doing this for running. I'm not doing this because I'm competing, or not, definitely not because I'm winning. it definitely made me, like, understand I like running just for, like, the pure essence of it.
As a distance runner, you have to have a love for running. Otherwise, yeah. You couldn't do it. Well, how did you develop this passion for running?
So it was kind of on accident. I wanted to be good at football, of course. Like, I feel like most kids want to be good at football. And so I was actually in seventh grade. I was the same height as I am right now. And I was about 20 pounds heavier, and I actually had my football coach call me Chunky Charlie. And then when I joined cross country, I was kind of, you know, when you're on a cross country team, a bunch of skinny kids, and so my friends picked up on that name. I was known as Chunky Charlie, and I just remember my eighth grade year, I was like, you know, I keep on getting beat so bad at all these races. I was like, I just want to make sure I'm on the same straightaway as someone when they're beating me in a race when in track in the mile. And so I wasn't even focused on winning. I just didn't want to be beat so bad. And so I started running more. And then just because I started having more structure and actually started running more, I got, you know, I started having more success with it. And I kind of started surprising people. They're like, oh, Chunky Charlie is the fast one now. And, I just realized, like, you know, you develop a lot of confidence through that. You know, you kind of start off as kind of the butt of the joke on the cross-country team, and all of a sudden people have to take you seriously. And you're like – and so that was, like, what kind of happened. And I had two really good friends that just loved running so much, and I would hang out with them, and they would just talk about running all the time. It was only running. And I just remember, I was like, oh, I'll just do what these guys are doing, you know? And I just think that they always talked about it. And then I was like, oh, yeah. And then I really over-executed what they were talking about, I guess. I don't know. I just, throughout the years, you know, because that started in seventh, eighth grade. And then by the time, you know, I'm hitting the end of high school, I'm becoming a successful runner. And I never started running more to be a winner, really. It just started to be just better than what I was the day before. And then Here I am at this level. I never expected that I would be at much. Even winning an unseeded heat, definitely in a Division I race, I wouldn't expect.
Yeah. Now. So. That's pretty awesome. You know, before we started recording this, you were telling me a story about running, and you said you were going to do 11 miles because it was a down day, which, I got tired thinking about 11 miles. So how many, it begs the question, how many miles do you try to get in a day or in a week?
Yeah, so kind of our method here, you know, other teams will do it where they just start at a low mileage at the beginning of the season, and then each week they pick it up 5 or so miles each week. So by the end of the season, they're at the highest. We kind of do it where it's like we do 3 weeks at whatever you consider your high mileage is, and then you take a down week. So last week was like a down week for me. Right now, I'm doing about 100 miles a week. So that's about 15 plus miles. Like yesterday, I had a double, did 18 total. Between two runs, and then like today with it being a workout day, I'll just do, you know, the workout, but only do like 10 miles or so. So right now my I'm doing about 90 to 100. In the summer, I actually was hitting 110. That was pretty brutal. That was a lot of miles every day. That was pretty painful, but that's, you know, summer training is when you get your volume in and all that. So I'd say about 90 to 100 miles a week is what I'm shooting for. And then when I take a down week, it should probably be 75 to 80. I overshot it last week and did 86 miles because that long run I was talking about, I only needed 11, but then I was like feeling good. I was like, let's go 17. Well, I didn't think it was going to be 17 at the time, but I was like, let's run to that mountain there. So, yeah.
When we, you know, you look at the weather right now, we've had great weather here, December, January, for the most part, considering what oftentimes we get this time of year. So I'd imagine you're outdoors running a lot. Do you always try to run more like free running, or do you get locked onto a treadmill often?
I hate the treadmill. That is like, I will do anything that I can to avoid the treadmill. But sometimes you can't avoid it. Like I said, I'm from Minnesota, right above the Twin Cities, just by like a half hour. So it was a little colder over break, and there was a few days where it was snowing, and I went outside, and I was just running on the roads were so snowy, I was running about a minute and a half slower than what I usually do, and I was just dying, and I was like, okay, once I finished off the loop, I was like, I'm finishing the rest of this run on the treadmill, because, yeah, at a certain point, it's like, okay, I'm not really getting too much out of running and all this. So when I absolutely have to and I realize it's good for my better for my training, I do the treadmill, but that is rarely, never. I mean, I've run in negative 30 degrees before for 12 miles. I just put on a lot of layers.
Yeah, I would say. Why did you end up at USD, or what led you to USD?
Yeah, I just remember getting towards the end of my high school career, I was thinking about what I want to do with my running and how seriously I want to take it going further, and I just thought, why sell myself short? I want to try competing on one of the biggest stages that you can, which is the Division I level, and so, you know, I could have looked at Minnesota, USD, you know, the other South Dakota school that I don't want to talk about. But, you know, I was looking at schools like that, and I was just reaching out, just wanted to kind of see about the programs. And I remember talking to Fitz, and I really clicked with him. Maybe it's because he's the only person that likes talking more than me. But I really did like Fitz, and I just remember coming here. I really enjoyed the team when I got to like meet them, and just obviously the facilities here are extremely nice. And I just remember like I was pretty certain with my decision, like pretty much like a day or so after I kind of let it sit in, I was like, that's the place I want to go to. Plus, big deal too, is I'm pre-med, so I'm trying to go to medical school, and there's a medical school here. So that, it was kind of like, okay, I'm not sacrificing my academics so I can go to this, you know, running school. Like, I'm here to run, you know, but I'm also able to pursue, like, ultimately what I want to do with my life after running. So,
if I'm not mistaken, you're a sophomore athletically, yeah, and you could be done with your bachelor's degree by now. You're talking about med school. So yeah, how serious have you taken academics?
Yeah. So in high school, I did a program called PSEO. It's post-secondary enrollment option. So Minnesota, they paid for all my college. So my junior and senior year, I wasn't even going to my high school. I was just going to class in my college. Professors didn't know I was like a high school student. Like, as far as they were concerned, I was a regular college student. And so I got that all paid for, which was nice. And so I had my associates leaving high school. Wow. And so when I came here, I was like, I'll just take lighter loads, you know, just do like 12 credits, you know, and don't kill myself while I'm here. And because I wasn't going to try getting through in just another 2 years and then be applying for medical school. And yeah, I was going to graduate this fall, and because I only had two classes left. And then I just had a really good time at going to Texas Relays and all that. And I'm also a musician, and I was like, you know, maybe I could go and take some music classes and all that, kind of get back in touch with my music. And I also use this opportunity to have another track season. So there's a plus there. And on top of it, with applying to medical school, it's not bad taking a little bit more time. I'm only 21 years old.
Yeah.
So I am applying right now. I'm still waiting from one more school at this point. But if that falls through, then I'm just using this semester pretty much just to take my last class and some guitar and piano lessons, and then start working on the next cycle for medical school. But fingers crossed that that doesn't have to happen, because yeah, hopefully I get in this year.
No doubt. Well, you talk about medical school, so what was your motivation to kind of pursue medical school and go down that path?
Yeah, when I was young, I in about fifth grade, I had a teammate on my baseball team. It was the coach's son, actually. He got cancer, and obviously that was really tough. He ended up passing away after the cancer was gone, because the chemo kind of got to him. And I like remember my mom telling me, she's like, you're going to be the one to cure cancer and all that, which that's not really like where I'm at right now, where it's like, I want to be the one to cure cancer, you know. But it set the tone of like, I want to do something important with my life. I want to make sure that and also something that I love, you know. And I mean, it's kind of corny to be like, oh, I like science and all that, but I've always enjoyed my science classes and all that, and I do enjoy learning. And so I'm like, becoming a physician, you are always learning, you know, and you also are able to help people in a way, like in a very, what's the right word? I just want to it innately has purpose, like what you're doing, like, and that's, you're just helping people. And I just wanted to make sure that I was kind of having that same impact, because I could kind of see, like, that coach continued coaching for us even after his son passed. And I just remember, like, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I was putting in my, you know, share to kind of help out. And that was, like, the initial seed, I guess. And then just, you know, you look into it, you shadow. I work as a CNA when I'm back at home and all that. And I've, every time I take a look further into the medical field, each time I'm like, this feels right, you know?
Sure.
And yeah, and so that's kind of just, I'm just going for that. It's just one of those things where you just kind of know at a certain point.
Yeah, everybody has their, you know, story that gets them motivated or whatever, and yours obviously is unique. I heard that in high school you were involved in Nordic skiing as well.
Yeah.
How'd you get involved with that?
Well, actually, we had a much better Nordic ski program than our cross country. In fact, the one coach at the time, he almost trained cross country for Nordic. And, I mean, we were a pretty big powerhouse, and we did not have a big team, but he was just a very good Nordic coach. And I just was in cross country. My older brother did Nordic and all that, so I was like, oh, I'll do Nordic like my brother. I actually quit for 2 years, my 9th and 10th grade year, because I was like, oh, I'm going to focus just on running. I kept getting injured because I was just running too much, and I was like, you know what, this Nordic thing, the cross training, it's really good. Yeah, so I really did take my Nordic seriously, but I knew ultimately, like, running was my main thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, honestly, I was kind of a terrible skier, but the only thing that got me by was that I just had such an engine behind me. So other people didn't have quite the engine, but they had a lot better technique than me, so it made it a fair match, I guess.
So do you downhill ski as well?
I mean, I guess in the race there's hills that go down sometimes,
right?
But I do not alpine, no. There's actually a little beef between Nordic and alpine skiing.
Yeah.
We're like, we're the harder workers and all that. But I snowboard.
Do you still get the skis out at all?
This winter was the first winter in college where I actually busted them out, I think, maybe just twice. And
I was going to say, where'd you go? Because we haven't had much snow around here.
Yeah, well, in Minnesota, we
probably
actually
Minnesota,
did have snow.
Yeah.
But there's a place that blows snow. But even then, their extra trails that they don't blow snow on had enough. And so I did bust out the skis twice and went out for, like, two-hour skis. I mean, I would still have to do my run and run before, you know, so I didn't go too hard on the ski. I just went out there to enjoy it, which was kind of nice, because usually it's like, oh, I'm out here to, like, get better and all that. And it's like, this time I was like, I'm just out here to be outside and all that. And I did enjoy it. One nice thing about Nordic, too, is you get a lot of good gear to keep you warm.
Sure.
And so when I'm running, I have good winter gear, unlike a lot of my teammates who just come wearing, like, a hoodie. And it's like, that's not going to keep you warm.
You know, we talk about your running and obviously cross country, and there's indoor season, outdoor season, all of that. Do you have a preference one over the other, like the indoor versus the outdoor, especially being a distance runner?
Yeah, for sure. Outdoor is so much better. But I will say, especially this season, I think we got a lot of banked tracks that we're racing on and a lot of 300 meter tracks. Which I don't complain too much, but when you're on a flat 200, it gets tough when you're on that inside lane. I mean, I love our facility here. So, like, when you're just doing a workout on the outside lane, it's not too bad because then it's not as tight of turns. But definitely outdoor is just nicer because you're just not cranking on your knees so much and all that. Although then you got to deal with the weather. So I guess there is a trade-off, because I've had some pretty brutal races, especially my 10K last year, which that's a whole nother topic, but yeah.
Yeah, there are challenges certainly to both of them. Do you feel like indoor provides more challenges? Does outdoor provide more challenges? Because the terrain obviously is, you know, especially with cross country, the terrain indoors is a lot different than outdoors.
Yeah.
Plus you talk about wind and cold.
Yeah, so now when you're talking about cross country, then it really gets different, because outdoor, I'm gonna like the track so much more, but then you got to deal with wind, which that can be terrible, you know. But cross country is oddly, now it's like, now let's take the two elements and make them both worse, because now you can have a windy day with hills and all that, or you can be crossing a bridge that, like, doesn't have where like your spikes are going to stick in them, or you know, or you're just in a back trail, and then there's like these rocks that you've got to avoid because you can't step on a rock with spikes in and whatnot. And that, although it's kind of weird because then it's like, oh, that sounds worse, but it's so much more fun in my head. I love cross country. That is my sport, is cross country. I would like always compete for cross country. So yeah, it's weird that it's harder, but at the same time, it's like everyone's dealing with it. So yeah, you just sometimes you can't be hyper focused on the time because the course is going to be so bad.
No doubt. Whereas
like on an indoor track, if you run on a banked indoor track in, you know, in California versus, you know, all the way to Maine or something, it doesn't matter. You're on a banked 200 meter track, right? Similar. Whereas if you do an 8K, but you do it in the, you know, at those same schools or something, those courses can be extremely different. Go up a mountain on one, another one might be as flat as a pancake. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie, I really appreciate the conversation. I appreciate your time. Obviously, you've come a long way since the days of Chunky Charlie.
Yeah.
So keep that motivation. Good luck with the medical school process. Have a great rest of your season as well.
Sweet. Thank you.
That's Charlie Babcock. He is a runner from the state of Minnesota. Charlie, of course, cross-country runner. He was the number two cross-country runner this past year for the Yotes and also continues on in the track season. You can tell the young man, very, very smart. He's very, very motivated as well. So certainly wish the best for Charlie as he continues through his college career and his pursuit of medical school. All right, great to have you alongside for this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. Before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what's going on in Coyote Athletics. The men's basketball team is on a Thursday matchup at Western Illinois. The women's basketball team will host Western Illinois for a Thursday matchup. On Friday, swimming and diving heads to Omaha, or takes on Omaha, I should say, again in Vermilion at the Dakota Dome Pool. The diving events get underway at 3 o'clock. Swim events are at 5 o'clock. On Saturday this week, the track and field team heads to Brookings for the Jim Emmerich Invitational. Women's tennis is playing in Manhattan, Kansas. They'll play at Kansas State on Saturday. Swimming and diving continues against South Dakota State. They will compete in the Dakota Dome Pool. Women's basketball is back at home Saturday to host St. Thomas. And men's basketball is on the road on Saturday night. They will be on the road at St. Thomas. And then on Sunday, women's tennis will play Missouri State in Manhattan, Kansas. So things are picking up for us. That's what's going on in Coyote Athletics. As always, get your tickets at goyotes.com or call 605-677-5959. That is going to do it for us this week. If you ever have a story you want to hear more about, or an athlete or an administrator or a coach that you want to hear more about a particular story, perhaps it's not even to do with the sport that they are involved with, we would love to hear what you have, and you can always reach out to us, yotecast@usd.edu. Email yotecast@usd.edu. All right, that's it for me. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. Stay safe. Until next time, go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.